Hello and welcome back to Down the Slope. I like to start every single time I host by saying it's an unfamiliar voice, even though I'm on every week. Ewan unfortunately can't join us because he is lounging away in Spain, I believe it is, Liam?
That's right, yeah, in the Canaries. Yep.
And Greg unfortunately is having car problems. However, we do have three on the podcast. We'll start with Liam because I've introduced him. Liam, how are we doing?
Doing very well, thank you, mate. Made all the better by some very exciting news today.
Hey, I was going to say the last 15 minutes has probably loosened it up. And our first timer on Down the Slope, someone that we've been eager to have on, Patrick McPartlin. How are we doing?
Hi, very well. Thank you for having me on.
No, thank you very much for joining us. But just for any listeners who aren't aware of yourself, could you give a quick introduction over the work that you do and how it relates to Hibs?
Yeah, I suppose in a nutshell, I'm the chief Hibs writer for the Edinburgh Evening News. So essentially, I eat, sleep, breathe the Hibs. Sort of write about every single aspect of the club, whether it's first team, under 18s, women's team, hospitality redevelopments, you name it. And yeah, I've been doing that for a season now. So it's been an interesting first campaign.
And obviously, it's been a mixed bag to say the least. And what's been the highlight so far? Has there been any particular interviews you've covered? Any games you've went to that were better than the rest?
I mean, I think I recognise that there's a lot of people who'd love to be doing what I'm doing, not just for Hibs, but for, you know, any football club really. So it's certainly quite a kind of privileged position to be in. And I think the sort of big occasions, so semi-finals or finals at Hampden are always, you know, pretty memorable occasions in terms of atmosphere, in terms of the size of the game, if not always results from a Hibernian point of view, and obviously things like derbies as well, I think would also be up there. On a personal level, it was I'm a bit of a kind of ground hopping geek, so managed to pick off a couple of new grounds this season, including Ross County. So not a particularly great night from Hibs' point of view for a variety of reasons, but on a personal note, nice to get another one of the 42 ticked off. So,
and what number are you on for the 42?
I'm getting there. I think I must be sort of 35, 36, maybe. Nice. So I'm hoping that the League Cup, not being regionalised anymore, is going to maybe throw up a few surprises. So you never know.
And Liam, what about yourself? Where I think it's so annoying because I've been to East Stirling, Berwick Rangers, Cowdenbeath, and all these teams are just getting knocked out of the league. So all these ones I've been to, I was on like 36 at one point. I think I'm down to 33. Gutted.
I'm in the same boat as you. Those demotions are doing no favours for my bank balance because it means I need to cover some of those grounds that I missed out. But in all seriousness, I don't think there's quite a few of the Highland clubs I've not done. I've not done Annan. So I've no idea what number I'm on. Probably I'd hazard a guess at around about the 30 mark, but yeah, way off it.
Aye. And then interesting. But like as everybody knows, we like a tangent on this show. Patrick, what is the experience like as a journalist going to these stadiums? Do you get treated quite well? Do you get like the hospitality experience, or do they just kind of be like, here's your seat in the box, write stuff?
I think it depends. It's not as easy as saying, like, you know, the big clubs treat you like royalty and the little clubs kind of leave you fend for yourself. Or not little clubs, but maybe, you know, less sort of big clubs. It's very kind of, I think it kind of depends on when the game's taking place. If it's a Saturday afternoon, if it's a sort of cold Tuesday night, that sort of thing, how many people are expected, that sort of thing. I've been to games where you're scrabbling around for a Wi-Fi connection and you end up having to do it using your phone hotspot. You know, no PowerPoints, things like that, places where you don't have a desk and you're kind of balancing your laptop on your knees. So I'm not going to name the grounds because that wouldn't be fair. But there's been some interesting experiences over the past sort of season and a half or so. But no, I mean, generally, everyone's sort of really friendly. They recognise, think that, you know, we are just there to do a job. And haven't really been any bad experiences at all. So it's probably the least I could ask for. So.
Hey, well, Scottish football's keeping you happy, then that keeps us happy as well. We've established that, but Liam alluded to it earlier that in the last half hour, we've got some very exciting news. We'll tick off the first one that everybody kind of knew has known is going to be happening for about 2-3 weeks or so. David Marshall is officially a Hibs player. In my opinion, I think he definitely walks into the number one spot. Liam, is that the type of caliber of player you're expecting to see throughout the summer?
I think so. I think he'll be quite different in terms of the mould of signings that we'll be going for. I don't imagine we'll be signing too many other 37-year-olds. Might be wrong, but I think he, to me, feels like we talked on this show about needing to improve the spine of the squad, and I think he feels like the first addition on the way to improving that spine. And I think providing that leadership and also just being a really good influencer in the dressing room as well will certainly help. But that's before you take into account all of his goalkeeping abilities. I must admit, I've not seen him play for probably since the last time he played for Scotland, because I know he played bits and pieces in the Championship last season for QPR, but I've not seen a huge amount of him, so I don't really know where his game's at yet at the moment, but I'm pretty confident he will be an improvement on what we've got in that department.
Yeah, like the main thing I'm basing it off was his pretty cool highlight reel that was put up by Hibs earlier today. Patrick, have you got any more experience? In your opinion, I think you'll be slightly less biased than us on the pod. Do you think there's any competition for Marshall? Do you think he kind of walks in and takes that? Or do you think Macy and Dabrowski will still be in the running for it?
I think if you're no matter what level of club you are, I think you always want to have competition for that number one spot. You want your... If you have an obvious number one, so the past season, that would be Macy. You want him to be being pushed by, in this case, Dabrowski. And I think, you know, any competition is healthy. I suppose it depends what's happening in terms of, you know, the players' personal situations, what the new manager thinks. There's a lot of uncertainty at the moment. We don't know, you know, which players are going to be staying, which ones might be going. I think Lee Johnson has already said he's done a lot of homework on the team. He can see where players are fitting in to how he wants to play, and those that maybe don't. So, I mean, we could speculate and say maybe his arrival means there's going to be outgoings. But I think no matter who stays, no matter who is still going to be at the club, I think just having someone of his experience, of his talents, is really going to be beneficial for not just the club in terms of having a better season than last season, but also just helping bring through the keepers that are there, like Dabrowski, like the younger keepers, like Tom Carter, Murray Johnson, can only really be a good thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely, fully agree. And just conscious of the fact we've got lots to get on with, we got another new signing just in the door, and I don't think any of us expected it. Patrick, I don't know if you're different and you might have had like a wee incline from the club, but as you mentioned before the call, supposedly a Football Manager wonder kid, Nohan Kenny, I'm going to assume it's Kenny, yeah. Until we're told otherwise. Essentially 6'2" or 6'3", depending on where you read it from, midfielder / defender from Leeds. Seems quite exciting on the front of it. I can't lie and say that I know anything about the boy. Patrick, we'll come to you first this time. What do you know about him, and how excited should Hibs fans be?
I think, well, first and foremost, I think this is the number six the club's been looking for a while. Whether he's necessarily the only number six they've been looking at. I mean, Johnson would obviously be aware of him from his time in England. But I think certainly highly rated down south. He's been on the bench for the Leeds first team, I think 14 or 15 times this past season. So, you know, there's obviously something about him. You know, he's still only 19, capped by England at sort of under 16, under 17 level. So I think there's a bit about him. I think it's a type of player the club's been missing, certainly over... Well, certainly the last 6 months, really, I suppose, since Alex Gogic left on loan. Although I think he's going to be a different type of player than Gogic was. And I think the club getting the business done early can only be a good thing. They can come in first day of July, get started with a new team, and, you know, I suppose the rebuild maybe seems a bit much, but can maybe... you know, we'll maybe see signs of how Lee Johns wants to play with, you know, the players he's bringing in. So, yeah, I think reason to be excited. The fact that it's the club did keep it under wraps. There was no kind of hint that he was going to be coming in, I think is probably a good thing from the club's point of view, doing their business behind closed doors, if you like. And I think that's, yeah, I mean, again, not really too familiar with his style of play, but by the sounds of it, you know, quite an exciting player and certainly one the team's been calling out for.
Liam?
Yeah, I mean, not a huge amount to add in terms of knowledge of the player. The only bit that really gleamed is the article that you sent us earlier on, Harry, which was from I think a Leeds fan podcast that had highlighted he was one of the most exciting prospects in their academy. So I think there was maybe a little bit of surprise that he'd been let go. I think he played 26 games in the under-23 Premier League last season. So it feels like it's a decent level. I think you don't tend to get a huge number of like starting guys in that number six position at 19 years of age is the only thing I would say. So kind of I suppose he's maybe been signed with a view to bringing him on in that position rather than him being necessarily coming in straight away and being a starter right from the get-go. But I guess we'll see. I'm certainly encouraged that that's a position that I think we've all identified we needed to address, and they've addressed it. So no complaints from that perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the one word that I think all football fans want to see is when you've signed a coup of a player, like the player that you're not supposed to sign, and supposedly everybody in England was interested in the guy. Again, that's an article written by Hibs after we've signed a player, so of course they're going to make it as positive as possible. But I think it's something that we should definitely be excited about. I think with the way fans have been towards the club, it has been relatively negative last couple of months. So the fact that we're actually starting to get these cogs turning as we come towards the off-season, I think really positive. So yeah, great stuff. And in typical Down the Slope fashion, we have started in reverse. So we're going to put the pause on right now. Guys, come on a journey with me. We're going back. I can't remember how many months it is, but you know, we are 7 games unbeaten to start the season. Life is looking great. Things are feeling rosy. At that point, how good did you guys think last year's transfer window was? We've just been talking about some of the signs we made this year. From a Hibs perspective, like at the end of the transfer window, I remember, I think I gave it an 8 out of 10. I was actually relatively happy. After it immediately happened, Patrick, could you notice any holes straight away, or with the form that we had at the start of the season, did you think that Hibs had quite a solid window?
I think it was fairly solid based on the players who were still there from the previous season, ones who were maybe going to be coming back to full fitness, people like Kyle McGuinness, Chris Cadden. Obviously, they made, I think, brought in a couple of players. I still thought, because of the illness and like COVID injury, whatever it was, that Christian Deutsch had to deal with last summer, I still felt there might have been room for another kind of senior centre forward. I know Jamie Gullen was utilised quite a bit latterly towards the end of Jack Ross's time at the club, but I still felt there was maybe room for like another senior option up front. I think the club's been needed that for quite a number of seasons, possibly even go back to Neil Lennon's time. That was partly because I thought of James Scott as a winger, a kind of wide forward. So I didn't really see him playing the sort of number nine role that he did latterly the end of this season. So yeah, I think initial signs were that they'd kept the players that they wanted to keep in terms of Portress, in terms of Doig. They'd held on to Nisbet. They brought in players who'd been performing well at their other clubs, people like Jake Doyle-Hayes. And yeah, like I say, players coming back from injury, you thought it looks like a fairly solid squad. And you know, if things go well, if they can, you know, keep form going, if they can keep players fit, then you would think, yeah, it has been, you know, broadly speaking, a fairly decent summer window. I'm not sure I'd be quite as optimistic to give it an 8 out of 10, but I think, you know, at least, you know, 7 maybe for me.
Yeah, fair. And Liam, yourself, like, if you try and think of it as how you felt at the time, what were you thinking?
At the time, I felt steady but unspectacular was how I would describe it. I thought we signed players for the positions that perhaps we needed them in, but I wasn't necessarily confident that those players were going to come in and be starters even at the time. I wasn't convinced that they were better than what we got. I mean, certainly on the face of it, an England under-20s captain sounds like a really promising signing. We all know how that kind of turned out, unfortunately. James Scott, I was really quite positive about, just based on his time at Motherwell. I thought he was going to come in and be someone who had a pretty significant impact. That didn't really turn out for a variety of reasons. And then, you know, Patrick alluded to an injury. The injury to Doidge was massive, but there were other injuries that kind of curtailed, I suppose, our start to the season earlier on in the season. And actually, it became quite apparent when those injuries occurred that we just didn't have players to step in and take up those minutes who were kind of first team ready. So it's one of those easy ones in hindsight, isn't it? Look back, say, I don't think it was that great, but like I think the actual reality, we just were maybe two, maybe three, if I'm being greedy, players short of kind of what we needed for that first chunk of the season.
Yeah, I think depth's something that always crops up, especially when there's been lots of injury issues. Like, it's one of those things, you can live in hypotheticals if you want to, because if Hibs had kept Martin Boyle for the whole season, Kyle McGuinness hadn't got injured for the whole year, where could we have actually finished? But I suppose those two things didn't go our way. And then after that jolly old start to the season, the wheels, I think it's fair to say, start to fall off. After the Rangers game, where we were actually pretty good until, at the time, was quite a controversial red card for Ryan Porteous. We'll not cover that because we covered that in quite a lot of detail at the time. But how did the team lose so much momentum? Because obviously, playing away at Ibrox, it's a stadium which I think it's fair to say we're not expected to win games. What was the key facet that just made Hibs capitulate? Liam, we'll come to you first on that.
We were both at the beanbag at Easter Road.
We were indeed.
Because there was no away fans that day, I don't think, either, which can't help if you kind of contributed towards maybe the decision. But anyway, we won't dwell on that because you've told me not to. No, there was a brief period there where we were leading that game where things were very, very rosy. And I've heard it spoken about in other podcasts, so I don't really want to go into detail on it, but that almost was the turning point of the season. You know, the way we defended for quite a period after that, sending off quite stoutly and held them out. And then Rangers scored two goals in kind of relatively quick succession. That did feel, you know, again in hindsight, looking back on it, does feel like the point where our season really turned. And then I think a little bit of how Jack Ross kind of came out after the game as well, and not to be uber critical of him, but he maybe could have had a slightly stronger backing of his players. I think it was a mild enough statement that allowed people to make their own interpretations about whether or not he was backing Porteous up. And it did feel a little bit from that point onwards that things just started to go south, but gradually. Not, it didn't, you know, it's not like things went, you know, drastically downhill overnight. Just we didn't really recover our form after that point. And you could put some of that down to the injury of Kyle McGuinness, obviously, because that was pivotal. But also, I think you have to look at the players that were still available. We probably weren't getting the best out of what we had in the squad at that time.
And Patrick, from your perspective covering the games, do you think that a lot of the blame and onus does fall onto Jack Ross? Obviously, he managed to keep us consistent in the Cups, but as soon as it came to the league, we did kind of have that massive period of falling down.
I think it's maybe a bit unfair to sort of try and apportion blame into one party, whether it's the players, whether it's the manager. I think there were a lot of contributory factors. As you've mentioned, the injuries didn't help. I think I've always looked at that game at Ibrox as the kind of club sliding doors moment of the season. If Porteous isn't sent off, or if they don't concede, you know, the two goals, if they hold on for a draw or even, you know, the 3 points, then perhaps the following however many weeks it was would have been very different. I mean, there is also a chance that they would have gone exactly the same way that they did. It's the sort of part of the joy of football is you can't really predict what's going to happen in a lot of cases. But I think we talk about managers having shelf lives at club and shelf lives at clubs, and I think possibly it was almost coming to the end of Jack Ross's time at the club, just almost kind of a natural kind of end to it. Not obviously at the Rangers game, but just sort of like from then on. I think we'll talk about his sacking later on, but I just felt that watching the team, there was something missing that had been there last season. Although I wasn't covering the games in the same manner that I have been this season, the sort of previous season, the sort of season without fans, there was, I don't know whether you'd call it just a swagger, is not maybe the right term for it, but it's about as close as I can get. There was this, you know, the team sort of played with a swagger in a lot of games. It's just why partly they finished third. There were a lot of good performances, obviously helped by having Boyle and Nisbet Doige hitting double figures and staying fit for the bulk of the season. And, you know, if one of them was out of form, the other two were still doing the business. And I think this season just passed, it's been, I don't think the injuries helped. I don't think the change of system helped. And we look at, I mean, Kevin Nisbet is obviously a talented striker. I don't personally think he's very well suited to playing as a lone striker. I think he absolutely has to play in a two. And I think a lot of people, fans or not, would look at the team and the way they were playing and say that was, you know, potentially part of the problem, was that we were, well, fans would say, you know, we were trying to stick was it square pegs and round holes, which is partly down to not having the options. But a lot of fans said that to me. I've been speaking to them throughout the course of the season, and basically wanted to know why Hibs weren't just going with two up front. They said that would have solved a lot of problems, and you know it's never that simplistic. But I do think maybe comes down to that a little bit, that just not having the players available to play the way you wanted probably contributed to Ross's downfall. I mean, you can debate whether or not he was sacked too soon, whether or not he should have got the cup final, whether he would have turned it around, but it certainly things weren't going in a good direction, and there wasn't really any sign of it turning anytime soon, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point as well with the square pegs and round holes. Like, I feel the squad we had was very based around the system we played last season. So as soon as the injuries happened, we didn't have the players to step in and fill out those roles. So yeah, I think that's pretty spot on. And being honest, I think it was a relatively anonymous period of time between that Rangers game, which, as you said, was kind of the signpost for things falling apart, and then the next Rangers game in the Cup, which I don't really think the period of time between that, like obviously the form was pretty poor, we weren't putting out many good performances, but we weren't really terrible in that time period. But then the semi-final hit, and I don't know about you guys, but I thought, you know, third place is ours, we're winning the cup, this is a whole, I thought that was the exact flip of the Ibrox game. I thought that was a whole season turning around. I don't think that we'll go a season in our lives without mentioning this game again, because it was pretty incredible. 3-0 up against Rangers at Hampden after half an hour, it was unbelievable. Liam, did you have loads of positive thoughts after that game, or did you kind of think, yeah, that's a fluke and we've done them there?
No, I think it's really hard not to get caught up in a wave of positivity after a result like that. And I think you wouldn't be a football fan if you didn't allow one game to completely cloud your judgment and your memory of everything that's gone before in that season. Because I think that's why we love the game, is because I think I coined it earlier on the season, we talked about this, when you're winning, it feels like you're never going to lose. And when you're losing, it feels like you're never going to win. And we won that game against Rangers, and I came away from it just thinking, if we can just reproduce that, which surely we can, at Easter Road, our home ground, for even 60-70% of the fixture between now and the end of the season, we'll be third again. And we'll probably have a couple of cup finals. Well, we'll certainly have one cup final to look forward to. We'll probably have a couple of cup finals. But it's a real pity that kind of performance has got lost in what's overall been quite a meh season, because actually the way we played that day, not just the first half, but the way we defended in the second half, we didn't concede really very many opportunities to Rangers, despite them kind of dominating, having so much of the ball in it. Yeah, I think you can't help but like look back on that and think that moment or that game, what could have been this season had we just been able to find a form off the back of that. But again, you know, circumstances again kind of conspired against us at the end of that game, or not long after it.
Yeah, and yourself, Patrick, did you think that could have been a turning point? Was that the pedestal that Hibs needed to try and kick on for the rest of the season?
I think there's certainly an element of that. Watching the performance, I remember sitting there, it was right after the COVID-19 outbreak. Players hadn't played games for what seemed like an eternity. There hadn't been sort of like a full complement at training for, you know, a significant period of time. And I think when Martin Boyle scored the second goal, I remember just thinking this wasn't in the script. Like, I know we talk about cup games being one-offs and anything can happen, but it seems that doesn't happen as often as you would think. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's a cup game, anything can happen, there's only one winner, that sort of thing. Like, but quite often it doesn't actually pan out that way. It goes the way you expect it to. But it was just really, I don't know whether some of the fallout from the COVID-19 stuff had kind of galvanized the team, whether there was this sort of almost like a siege mentality, but they kind of played a bit, especially the first half. And again, the defensive performance in the second half was just really playing like a kind of team possessed, I guess. I think there were a few occasions before then, possibly like parts of the opening game of the season at Motherwell, a couple of other games where, you know, Hibs maybe went 1-2-3 goals up by halftime or whatever. Looked really, I try not to use the swashbuckling word too often, but that's, you know, for want of a better word, that's kind of the way they were playing. It was this the kind of football fans wanted to see. They were, you know, attacking, they were defending well. And you know, the opposition teams couldn't really deal with them. But I also don't think we saw that enough from Hibs. I think if there'd been more of that, then I think it would have been a different season. I think, you know, Jack Ross's tenure might have lasted a bit longer. Why that didn't happen more often, I don't know. I don't know whether it's down to the players not sort of believing they were capable of doing it, whether it's to do with motivation, whether it's to do with energy levels, whether it's to do with just overall skill and quality. I could debate it for hours, but I think in any cup game, no matter what has gone before, to put in a performance like that, you think, well, this feels pretty significant. But especially after what Hibs had just been through, you thought this feels different. This feels like we've kind of got back on the horse, I guess. And it was just, I think some weeks later, we revisited it when we were discussing it on a video at work, and just thought, why couldn't they do that more often? Like, why couldn't they repeat that performance? Why couldn't they put in that performance more than they did? And I don't think we came up with an answer. It was just one of those, you know, if they had been able to do that more often, they might be better off than they are at the moment. But it's also difficult to see why they haven't been able to. Is it, you know, is it just down to one factor, or is it several contributory factors? But yeah, it was a pretty crazy game, I think, is probably the best way of looking at it.
Yeah, because on paper, it definitely was not the plan. Like, Hibs hadn't scored, like, I think we'd only played like two games, we hadn't scored in like 40 days, and then Rangers had won like 10 of their last 12 games and stuff. Like, we were not supposed to win that game by the laws of nature, but we went and we battered them, so it was great. And I always like to bring up the fact that they were all wearing orange for some reason, and that always just amuses me that they were all wearing orange and got pumped at Hampden. But then, yeah, the games to follow that was, I think, on paper, a very easy run of form. We were playing at the time bottom of the league Livingston, second bottom of the league Ross County. Games that we really should have been winning, and we got bullied in both of them. And essentially that spelled the very end for Jack Ross. At the time, I was very, very angry. I was up and I'd stayed up to go to a couple of the games. So I'd went to the Ross County game and I came back and I was absolutely livid. And I was like, I want him at my club. And then we went and got beat on Livingston. And I think, like, even if it was just in the moment, I think a good 65, 70% of Hibs fans wanted Jack Ross out. And with it being a relatively inexperienced board at the time with Kensal and Gordon first season together, I think that weight of pressure kind of forced them to get rid of Jack Ross. At the time, Patrick, what was your initial impression? Did you think that the club was being very hasty, or do you think that with that run of form, it kind of had to go?
I think, again, we're looking at this with hindsight, yeah. But I feel that the board, this is just speaking personally, I feel that the board saw the reaction from the fans and maybe a little bit cowed by it, and just sort of thought, this is not good. This is not just a vocal minority. This is the majority. I wasn't actually at the Livingston game. I was I was on a day off, because I always am. So it was I'd actually gone along to the Hibs under 18s were playing a youth cup game at Ainslie Park at Spartans Ground. So I'd gone along to that to cover that, because, you know, I thought, well, I'm off, so I'm not doing my kind of regular job, but, you know, I'll go along to the under-18s and then still get content and, yeah, sort of keeping up with what's happening at Almond Vale on my phone, and sort of seeing, you know, the missed penalty, seeing Livingston taking the leads and then the red cards at the end. And I just thought, wow, okay. Because after the Ross County game, where there'd been the two red cards, and you just thought, what's happening? It was genuinely a really surreal moment, as the under-18s are sort of banging in like four goals, five goals, and sailing through to the next round of the cup. And I'm just sort of thinking, what has happened to the first team? And also feeling a little bit guilty for not being there, because it seemed like it would be quite a sort of defining moment in the season. And it wasn't wrong, obviously, because I think it was the next day they announced that Ross had been sacked. But I do think that part of it, at least, was the board reacting to what the fans were saying. I mean, they must have seen what was being said on social media. I believe there were chants aimed at Ross at the Livingston game as well. And I think once you get into that territory, then it's either the dreaded vote of confidence from the board or you're just out. And obviously, in this case, it was the latter. So, I mean, I think there's a school of thought that says it was possibly the right time to sack Ross, but possibly not the right time to bring in Sean Maloney as his successor. But I mean, I certainly think that there was a degree of just, I wouldn't call it a knee-jerk reaction, but I do think there was a lot of the decision was formed by the sort of fans' reaction. And I think the board were just a bit, I don't know what the word is, not intimidated, but I think maybe a little bit alarmed is maybe the best word, alarmed by what they were hearing, and just thought there's no way we can proceed with Ross as manager, because it's going to turn the fans against us even more. Attendances are going to dwindle. So yeah, I think there was a degree of reacting to the fans, but I think also part of it was just the run of form and the nature of the defeats at Ross County and Livingston, and that certainly played a part.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Liam, keen to get your thoughts on that as well. And the main thing in hindsight I have looking back at it is the fact he never got the cup final. For me, it's frustrating, because obviously if the board thinks he should be sacked and then he goes and wins a cup and he loses the next game, you can't then sack him. So I can understand it from that perspective. But what's your take on the whole thing?
I think what we have to recognise is some of that strength of feeling from the supporters existed long before the beginning of the season. So some of that strength of feeling dates back to the St Johnstone game last season, even two seasons ago, the Hearts semi-final defeat. You can pick a multitude of different games, and there was a real strength of feeling from a vocal and very loyal kind of part of the fan base that really did not want Jack Ross at Hibs any longer. And then I think there's another element of the support who absolutely would have given him more time, and then there was sort of another minority, if you like, in the middle, who I think probably their heads did kind of turn, if that's the right expression, over the course of those kind of couple of games, the Ross County defeat and the Livingston defeat, to name a couple. And look, I think I've probably like mused, I've flip-flopped on this so many times that I've probably struggled to make my own mind up, but I think there was an element of it. At the time, my gut told me it was the right decision. It did feel like the right decision. I think a couple of times in retrospect, I've maybe gone back and, just because of the way of the subsequent appointment worked out, maybe it wasn't such a great decision. But again, that's another looking back on it with hindsight, and would have maybe done things differently as a result. I think Ron Gordon, maybe just reading between the lines of some of his statements over the last couple of weeks, has maybe made a bit of a hint that he maybe regrets making the decision at the time that they did. I don't know if I'm reading too much into things he said or if I'm picking it up wrongly, but some of the comments he's made about kind of continuity, for example, I think probably demonstrate that he's thought that maybe actually it wasn't the right call. I think ultimately it's one of these things that time will tell. Jack Ross will get another job and probably in our league in the very near future, because I think he is and will be a very highly sought after manager on the basis of what he did at Hibs. I'm inclined to say I think he'll do a pretty good job wherever he lands up next as well, and I think he'll be very motivated to do a very good job against this club, because I still sense, I was listening to Sports Sound yesterday, and just very briefly kind of picked up a few comments on that, and it was one of the things, reflections they were having, and the unanimous verdict from the Sports Sound panel, which I must admit did include, I think it was Craig Levine, Richard Gordon, I want to say maybe Ricky Foster and Ian Other, the unanimous verdict was that it was an extremely harsh sacking based on their perspective. So from outsiders looking in, it feels like a harsh signing, and I think probably as a Hibs fan I'm kind of landing somewhere in the middle, picking splinters at my backside as always. Sorry.
No, that's definitely fair. Fun wee story about Jack Ross. My dad plays walking football at Orium, and he saw Jack Ross. So he said to him, "When you get in the Hibs job back, mate?" And he said, "Anytime they pick up the phone." So you never know. Jack Ross might be on his way back one day. Apparently, he's not closed the door on us yet. That might just be my dad talking nonsense, but I like to believe him. So, we're at the stage now. Jack Ross gone. Cup final. I'm still slightly heartbroken over it because I was accidentally celebrating the Celtic goal because I hadn't realised they'd scored. So let's gloss over the cup final because we've got another Hampden experience to talk about anyway. And then we got Sean Maloney in the door. Sean Maloney's first two games, I thought we actually played very, very well in those two games, and I was expecting that to be a sign of things to come. What was the initial impressions with the change of tempo of football, because that was the main thing I got from the Dundee United game especially, but the Aberdeen Dundee United game as a whole. Liam, heading into that January transfer window, just how pumped were you for Maloney Ball?
I think the combination of like a very workmanlike win over Dundee and then that win over Dundee United and probably kind of a workmanlike win as well for Aberdeen had kind of lifted everybody's spirits, and I think we all were going into the January transfer window with a bit of optimism that we were going to bring in the much needed reinforcements that we talked about, fill in some of the gaps in the squad and also kind of recruit players to play in the style of football that Sean Maloney wanted to play. So again, come January, like, I was overtaken by another wave of optimism, I'm afraid.
And Patrick, what was the initial opinion from yourself looking in, seeing the club string those wins together for the first time in what felt like a very long time?
Yeah, there was I think a little bit of kind of perhaps cynical, it's just a new manager bounce type thing, anybody could have done this, but aside from that, you could see the team was playing differently. As you mentioned, like the tempo, the pace with which the team was playing, getting up the park, you thought, this is, you know, this is very different, this is it's kind of a bit redolent of how they've been playing in the season, season without fans, just that really kind of fast, relentless opposition not really able to deal with it. I think we saw a little bit of it in the Aberdeen game, we certainly saw a lot of it in the Dundee United game at Tannadice, and I think I thought, like a lot of people and fans as well, that it was, that was the way it was going to be, that, you know, Hibs had got the appointment spot on, they brought in the right man, and he was playing football the way that the fans wanted the club to play, and he had the players to do it. And, you know, so it didn't just feel like new manager bounce. It felt like there was something a bit more there, and you think he's worked with Belgium, he's worked alongside Roberto Di Matteo, he's worked with these, you know, world-class players, and you think, well, I said Roberto Di Matteo, that's
rubbish. Roberto Martinez.
Roberto Martinez, yeah. Showing my age there. And and I think we, certainly in the press box, we were quite kind of taken aback because we didn't know what a Sean Maloney team would look like. And we just sort of seen sort of like high tempo, you know, plenty of goals being scored. And you thought, this, you know, this looks good. And then I don't know whether the winter break had an impact. I don't know whether it was losing Martin Boyle, whether it was a combination of both, but just never really seemed to recapture the way they played in those two games, and especially the Dundee United game. They just never really seemed to get back to that at any point in the remainder of Maloney's tenure. There were signs. I think there were a few sort of bad results, but you could maybe see signs of that sort of the positive shoots, I guess, of recovery, if you like, from you know, the first couple of games after the winter break, that you thought maybe this might get turned around, but it seemed like game after game I was writing the same thing, which was, it feels like Hibs are just about there, but that was for about four or five games in a row, and you think, well, when are they actually going to get there? So yeah, just very, very different from the first couple of games to the rest of the tenure, really. Even in the games, even in the victories, like the cup games, the victory against Ross County as well, it's still felt that there was something missing. But whether that was Martin Boyle or whether it was something else, I'm not sure. But I think it certainly seemed like the right appointment at the time. It seemed like clubs going in the right direction. And then obviously things just fell off a cliff, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we're at the stage, you know, we were halfway through the season, started the season off magnificently, then fell off the cliff. Then we kind of brought it back up. So we're kind of in that middle ground of not knowing whether we're going to shoot right up the league or if we're going to fall right down. But we all thought quite positively, we're going to shoot right up the league. And then we done something that Hibs don't normally do. And at the start of the January transfer window, we saw a couple of signings coming in. We thought, you know, this is getting exciting. We brought in the likes of Harry Clark, who was Rocky Bashiri, came in quite early. Was Melkerson one of the early ones?
Yeah.
Yep. Melkerson. Like, we were getting these flashy young players in through the door that were this pace, energy that Maloney promised us as he first joined the club. And, you know, it was really exciting. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think where he went wrong in hindsight, I think the players he let go, I think if he'd even kept one of the two midfielders out of Gogic and Halberg, and if he'd it was unfortunate because I can understand letting Murphy go when you were bringing in Mitchell, but in hindsight, if he just had that extra option to actually bring off the bench, even though Murphy wasn't great in the latter half, the first half of the season, he was still scoring goals like St Johnstone away. So for me, I think that was actually a really solid transfer window if we didn't let players go. What do you guys think of the transfers in and transfers out? Patrick, I'll come to you first.
Yeah, I think you're spot on when you say about letting the players go. Personally, I would have, if I'd been Hibs, I would have kept Hallberg purely for his versatility. Certainly seems to, you know, uncovered a new lease of life at St Johnstone.
Yeah, so no, I was doing that. Liam's a huge Hallberg fan, so I was trying to cheer for Liam.
I think, again, it's the hindsight thing, yeah. But I think I was surprised to see so many players going out based on who they brought in. It didn't really seem like a kind of like for like, especially when you're sort of limited to, you know, I think it was just a couple of central midfielders really. I mean, it was Josh Campbell, Jake Doyle-Hayes, Joe Newell. And then after that, it was the sort of square pegs and round holes with Lewis Stevenson playing in there. And I know that's where he started off and he did perform well in there, but the club had also got rid of two central midfielders, at least three if you include Dylan Tate, who could have played there. And it just felt a little bit, like there hadn't been a great deal of forward thinking. Like the signings they brought in, I think for the most part looked good on paper. And again, injury kind of robbed him of Harry Clark for 3 months. Demi Mitchell got 5 games and then he was injured. And, you know, just a combination again of having to play players in positions where they're maybe not familiar. And I don't think the sort of ever-changing back line, I don't think that helped either. I mean, at some point, I'll probably look down and see how many different defensive combinations Hibs had this season, because I'm pretty sure it will be in the high sort of double figures between back threes, back fours, and whoever's played there. But yeah, I don't think that helped. And I think there were times we were in the press box saying, you know, maybe look at the subs available and look at who was brought on and saying, well, if they'd kept this player, if they still had that player, they could have brought him on. He would have been a good, a good option to see out the game, but they just didn't have it. And instead, you were either relying on players to come in and play in a position unfamiliar to them, or you were expecting players to come off the bench and turn a game when that wasn't their kind of forte, for want of a better description. So I think in terms of incomings, the transfer window looked quite good from Hibs, but I think there were sort of one or two questionable decisions in terms of players who left. Now, players want to play football. If they know they're not going to get much game time, then they do want to move on. But, you know, you do wonder whether some of those players might be better off staying at Hibs from the Hibs point of view of having more options and more versatile options. They couldn't have predicted the injuries beyond Harry Clark's, but, you know, in football, you kind of have to be prepared for everything, I think, so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Liam, what did you make of the January transfer window as a whole? You're on mute.
Thank you. It has kind of been said, it's probably become a footballing cliche that you live and die by the recruitment at your club. I also think that cliche rings true to an extent. I do think there's something for me which is also the missing element of that is retention and retaining your best players. And I think to an extent this club's done a better job than perhaps versions of this club previous have done of retaining their best players. But I do have a bit of an issue, and the Hallberg one's the one that really stands out for me as probably the one real glaring error in terms of retention, because I think his contract ran out at the end of the season anyway. I think he was on a 3-year deal, so for me there would have been absolutely no harm in keeping a player like him around the club. And ultimately what letting him go meant is that we had to play Josh Campbell probably more than the club anticipated Josh Campbell was going to be played, which has led to, I would argue, probably greater levels of scrutiny than he should have been subjected to, and therefore perhaps has actually hampered his development rather than furthered his development. So I just felt, and you know, probably just to echo what Patrick said in terms of, I felt like we've kind of lost a lot of the balance that maybe Jack Ross had created in that squad when Maloney came in. We seemed to sign players to fill holes, but not quite the right holes, and it all just kind of went a bit awry. That, and I think, you know, the obvious thing, you know, again, the recurring theme of this review is injuries. But, you know, the injury to Kevin Nisbet in February, which we could not have anticipated, but you probably could argue that we shouldn't have really let that January window go without signing another central striker that wasn't a 19-year-old that had only played football in the Norwegian second division up until that point. So the cynic in me is like, yeah, we were unfortunate with injuries, but we should have been aware, or, you know, we should have been more prepared, I suppose, rather than aware for there to be injuries, which is ultimately, I think, kind of why, if I look at it, really, why do we miss out in top six? It's a combination of suspensions and injuries was the reason that we weren't in top six. Ryan Porteous had been fit, very confident that we would have been in the, not been fit, hadn't been suspended for the last few games, very confident in the top six. Harry Clark had been available, very confident we made the top six. I think we were only one or two players short, which is incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, no, and I think we've kind of covered quite a lot of Maloney's downfall just through talking about the recruitment. I think, Patrick, you nailed it earlier on when you said that we felt Hibs were very just about there, but it's so frustrating when you're at a prolonged phase of just about there, because I think the games, like, even though it's lower league, like Arbroath, I thought as soon as we scored the goal, I thought we were fantastic for the rest of that game. Against Motherwell away again in the Cup, we started that game off really well, kind of fell away in the second half, but first half we were fantastic. And then even looking at games like the Livingston game where we ended up losing 3-2, but I think we took the lead twice. We were really good for phases of those games. And for me, the main problem that Maloney had, he could never put together a 90 minutes. And I think that's ultimately what kind of spelled disaster for him, because you can't come into a club and say, we're going to play this lovely football, you're going to be on your feet the whole time, excited for the game. And then after 30 minutes, you're like, oh, come on, another sideways pass. Just kind of overarching on Maloney's tenure from start. We'll cover the two Hearts games, because I think that was obviously the very deciding factor for the board to sack him. But from the Celtic game where we lost away from home to the Dundee United game where we've essentially failed to make top six, what were the key problems within that Maloney tenure? Liam, we'll come to you first on that one.
Not creating enough chances. And when we did create chances, not putting the ball in the back of the net. Like, we did not take any backward step in terms of our defending, I don't think. I don't think we got worse defensively. You might even be able to put a case forward and say that our defence got slightly stronger under Maloney. But we had long, long spells in games where we kept possession, but it wasn't meaningful possession. We didn't create chances. On the rare occasion where we created chances, see the last-minute chance from Elkson against Dundee United, we didn't take them. And if there's a moment that would define a manager's tenure at a football club, it would be Melkerson's missed chance under Maloney against Dundee United. Because a player with confidence and a player believing in himself and having had the right support around him and had the right kind of introduction to Hibs at that point in time with the right strike partner and all the right circumstances around him, puts that ball in the back of the net, and he didn't. And that was ultimately the defining moment.
Yep, hard to disagree with that. But Patrick, I think it's fair to say, like, it was a brave decision for Maloney as well. Like, it was brave for Hibs to appoint Maloney, but it was brave for Maloney coming into a club who had that expectation of third place to then, you know, are kind of scrapping for top six as he took over. Is there anything you feel that Maloney could have done different? Because as we've alluded to, he was very unlucky with the injuries, and the system that he played did perform well the first couple of games. Do you think that the signs were there that he actually could have done a good job, or do you just think that it was too early in his career to actually take a job like Hibs on?
My gut feeling is that if Hibs had appointed Maloney during a summer, then that would have been the ideal time to do it. You get a whole summer to get your style of play across to the players, bring in who you want, you know, practice in friendly matches, bounce games, whatever you want to call it, and just nail down the way you want to play and see if you can actually do it for the 90 minutes, as we were saying. I mean, fair play to him for taking the job mid-season. I think it's a difficult time to come in, and especially January transfer windows are also quite difficult. We hear this from players, managers, sporting directors, chief executives, that it's not a good time to be signing players. And yet, you know, that's ultimately what Maloney had to do. He had this transfer window to kind of shape his team for the second half of the season. And I go back to what I said before. It was just that kind of almost, and just not quite getting there and thinking about, you know, there must be something that they're not doing on the training ground, or that, you know, perhaps Maloney's telling them and they're not doing it, that, you know, there's just one sort of missing piece of the jigsaw puzzle, if you like, that just isn't there. And that's why they're just in sort of permanent limbo with a sort of like, well, we created a lot of chances. This is when, you know, Maloney would speak to us afterwards. We created a lot of chances. We had a lot of the ball in the final third. So, yeah, but, you know.
What'd you do it?
Yeah, it's like there wasn't. It was difficult because it's obviously you don't want to question a manager to the extent that he starts getting, you know, annoyed with the press. But a lot of the time I felt that we were asking the same questions and getting the same answers from him after games. And I understand that it's obviously his first managerial role, and club football is a very different beast to international football. And it wasn't for the want of trying, but you could see that when I spoke to him, whether it was one-on-one, whether it was in press conferences, there was that desire to do well. There was this, I think, a belief as well. I mean, you mentioned the Hearts games. I spoke to him just before the Tynecastle derby and was actually quite taken aback by just how confident he was that, you know, going into the game. Because I think looking at the way Hearts had been playing and looking at the way Hibs had been playing, it looked like there was only really going to be one outcome. But he was super confident, really kind of happy, laid back, chilled. And I think that's maybe a side that a lot of the fans didn't really see that often, because they often saw him in the kind of artificial press conference mode or Hibs TV when he's sort of asking set questions and that sort of thing. But it just, not every managerial appointment is going to work out. And I just think it was, I mean, possibly a case of right man at the wrong time. As I say, if he'd come in during the summer, that might have been perfect for him. It might have all worked out. And obviously, the first two games aside, I think it became clear from quite early on that it just wasn't quite clicking under Maloney. And for whatever reason, whether it was the style of play, whether it was the players not being able to do what you wanted, or as you were saying, just the inability to put together in 90 minutes. But I think you could see from fairly early on that it was just going to be almost like this, like I said before, like stuck in limbo. But they're just about there, but not quite. And, you know, I don't think there's really any sign of that changing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as you mentioned as well, the Hearts game, as the game started, like, you could kind of sense that belief, because we actually started the game pretty well. I think that we definitely started on the front foot after half an hour or so. I think we were still in the lead at that point, and I don't think you could deny Tibbs the lead. I think that we weren't dominating the game, but I think we were in control of it, if that makes sense. I think you can control a game without, like, absolutely dominating a team. And one thing that I thought was very positive about Maloney's tenure, I thought he got the absolute best out of Dre Wright. I thought Dre Wright actually looked like a proper player under Maloney. I know that he gets a lot of scrutiny from Hibs fans, but he looked like a different player in the system that he was playing there. And unfortunately, again, we love to come back to it, but injuries, he obviously went injured against Hearts, and I think that was honestly the deciding factor that essentially got him sacked, because I think if Dre Wright stays on with the way he was playing that game, I think he was causing Hearts so much problems. And as soon as he went off, obviously Josh Campbell's a lot less advanced up the pitch than Dre Wright is, and it just kind of deflated the entire system. After that game, yeah, the fans weren't particularly positive going into Hampden. It felt that we were kind of no options. Liam, ahead of Hampden, obviously, we're always going to back ourselves. We're never going to say we're going to get off Hearts, especially not at Hampden. How difficult was it to actually get optimistic for that game, given that we just bottled top six against our main rivals?
It was difficult. I'm not going to lie, it was difficult. Luckily, I had a few drinks on the way there to kind of, I suppose, help give some of that what's the expression, kind of brewer's confidence, I suppose. I'm trying to think of the expression. I just think we at that point things were in a bit of a malaise anyway. So I think going into Hampden, I feel like expectations had been lowered to a point where actually anything almost other than a heavy defeat had kind of become acceptable, which is not a good place to be in, I don't think, as a Hibs fan. But I think people were rightly very, very sceptical going into that game, because things that they'd seen in the weeks before, and there did seem to be a certain like fragility about the team, that, you know, a goal here or there had the ability to completely knock our confidence altogether. And we also were really concerned about where goals are going to come from. They came from a pretty unusual source in terms of that game itself as well. So it did feel like during the run-up to that game, and probably in some respects even after that game, it did feel like a bit of a must-win for Maloney and for the club generally. Sadly, it transpired that we didn't win that game at Hampden. But, you know, I can't say there was a lot of internal bickering between Hibs fans about accepting mediocrity, not accepting mediocrity, and vice versa after that period of time. And I've always been of the mindset that I can accept any performance when players give 100%, and I felt like they gave 100% that day. But ultimately, with the players that we had on the pitch who were available to us on that day, 100% from that group of players just was not enough. And therefore, my anger kind of wasn't so much directed at Maloney or the players itself. My anger, and I suppose my disappointment, was probably more directed at those in charge of recruiting and signing players for the club, because I felt like the tools that we had at our disposal that day weren't enough.
Yeah. I remember at the, well, I barely remember at the end of the game. I was in a very drunk state, but I was very angry. It's not often I won't clap players off a pitch, and I did not, and I said some words that I will not say again on the podcast. Patrick, I'd assume that you were at the game with a sober mind, unlike myself. Did you kind of think it was the D-Day for Maloney initially, or did you think, you know, you'll get the summer transfer window? What was your initial impressions after Hearts won that game?
Initial impressions, I think I actually wrote about this on the Monday, that he would get the summer to sort of properly put a stamp on the team, and I suppose almost kind of reset after what had been a very difficult sort of second half of the season. Again, injuries playing, you know, probably the biggest part in that. The game itself, I just felt that I don't think there was ever really, despite how well Hibs played, I don't think there was ever a time where we thought actually they could come back and, you know, get a result here. I think Liam alluded to it when he was saying about the players on the park giving 100%, but not quite being the quality needed. I think it was more that there wasn't a player on the Hibs team who had that little bit extra about them, who, you know, someone like a Martin Boyle, if you like, or I'm just trying to think of someone else, you know, maybe Kyle McGuinness, someone like that, someone who, you know, could conjure something out of relatively nothing. And Hearts did have players like that. And players like, you know, Ellis Sims, who's going to shoot from 25 yards, Stephen Kingsley, who, you know, can hit free kicks and long range shots. That's, you know, that's all it took. And players like Craig Gordon, who obviously pulled off that save from Porteous that prevented it from being 2-2, which may well have changed the game. And I think my gut feeling from watching the two teams playing again, and especially sort of twice inside a week, was just that Hibs sort of lacked that kind of wild card, a kind of joker, just some sort of player to do something unexpected, or, you know, pull it out of the bag when it was really needed. And I don't think they've really had a player like that since Boyle left. And that's possibly something they're gonna have to work on this summer. I think it's very difficult to replace like for like in terms of Boyle, but they do need to find a player or coax out of one already there at the club who can just, you know, kind of produce that bit of magic that can sometimes make all the difference, especially on, you know, the big stage like that.
I've kind of talked a couple of times about is maybe even needing like not just one player to replace Martin Boyle, but almost signing two players to like make up for the lack of productivity that he gave us probably over the last sort of, particularly the last two and a half, three seasons. And I think recognising that we're not going to sign a player of that quality, but we might be able to sign a couple of players in the wide areas at least, and the, most of them might not start every single week, but between the two of them, we'd make up for his number, his numbers in terms of goals and assists. But I also think there's like there's a major reality check that has to be had with Hibs fans in some respect when it comes to Martin Boyle, because that was a player who we developed over the course of 7 years to get him to the level he was at. Right now in football, it's very seldom do you have like a period of time where you sign a player and you can say to fans, it's okay, we're going to wait 7 years for him to come good. You know, and I'm not suggesting it took him all of those 7 years to come good, but because his play clearly evolved over time. But I remember watching Martin Boyle on his debut against Falkirk and I said, he's never going to be good enough for Hibs. And over a period of time, he proved me wrong almost every single week. So you know, I think there is something for me about when we go into like the summer window, looking and not trying to think with such a narrow mindset that we're trying to replace a right winger with that pace and with all the things that he has. Maybe it's a couple of players, maybe it's even three players, who knows, who aren't going to play every single week, but they might kind of make up for that level of production that you get. Sorry, Harry.
No need for sorries. It's a very valid point. I think that Martin Boyle leaving was quite a decisive factor in the season. I think denying that would be delusional. But yeah, then obviously we lost Jack Ross, and I personally refuse to talk about the next four games of football that happened afterwards. And in my opinion, they don't exist, because I was so bored consecutively, week on week, day, game after game, that I refuse to believe the first four games of the split exist. However, one game that we didn't cover that I think will be nice to cover, because, you know, we've had a decent chunk of negativity that we never want to end anywhere near that. But the St Johnstone game. You know, that was a breath of fresh air. A guy that I'd written off and said there's no point in giving him any game time. James Scott slapped me about and shut me up. Fair play to him. He had a fantastic performance. Paul McGinn scored. Are we giving him an overhead kick for that? I think we probably should, just because it's funny. and it was great as well just to see, like, I don't think David Gray, we've established in our own opinion, is ready for that management, especially at this level. But it was nice to see him go off on a win at the current moment and then bring on those young players. Liam, you were at the game. What was your highlight of that game as a whole?
Me saying after James Scott got his first, because I'd seen someone else say it earlier in the day, that he's definitely going to get a hat trick today. Just like the way the game had panned out, like just having that nothingness of like, there wasn't a huge amount to play for. St Johnstone put out a second string team. And then, you know, the one that goes in off his thigh and just thinking it is absolutely written in the stars for this to happen. And then the third goal, which was the best of them all, which was an absolutely brilliant header where he just took his time, picked his spot, knew exactly what he was going to do, put it back across the goalkeeper. And, like, you know, I think we're right to kind of end this on like quite a positive, cheery note, because actually I did come away from the game, although it was quite a hollow victory in some respects. I still kind of, it ended the season on a high, which I do think there's an element of importance about. But also, there's a little bit of a lesson there, I suppose, for us as Hibs fans, and you know, it's about that whole kind of not writing players off maybe too early. James Scott, again, I'm saying this for the benefit of hindsight, was probably written off by huge swathes of the fan base because of some comments that Jack Ross made about him and his ability to get fit or be fit. I can't remember the exact context. And he was kind of lambasted for that. Had those comments not have been made, I can't help but think maybe his time at Hibs would have panned out very, very differently. But they were made, so, you know, there's no way of changing that now. But I thought, yeah, just a really positive, good way to end the season. It shouldn't have been a game that we shouldn't play, because we shouldn't have been in the bottom six. But we were there, and we found a way to finish the season on a high. And for that, I am, I suppose, quite grateful, because it put a wee bit of a, it's a spring in my steps. That sounds too positive, but it gave me a bit of a lift after a bad season.
Patrick, yourself, obviously, you've had to follow Hibs across the country this season and writing match reports. It can't be easy writing about some of the turgid football that we've had to watch this season. But it must be nice, like, as the game as a whole, like, there was obviously the, like, memorial video and stuff for the fans, and then Stevie Crawford got brought on the pitch. As a whole, it was like, it was kind of a nice exhibition as a whole, as opposed to just a football game. Was it a nice way to end the season for you after what must have been a rollercoaster of a season for yourself as well?
Yeah, I think so. It's always difficult when you're kind of the club reporter to be going into press conferences like week after week and being like, so, you know, how do you assess that one? sort of not sure. Yeah, not sure whether you're going to get the, not sure whether the manager is just going to be really kind of quite kind of, well, you know what, they were the better team, we deserve to lose, or whether it's going to be sort of like snapping at the press and getting quite narky and things like that. So it is a little bit like seeing the lion and having the chair and just sort of like, you know, arm's length. Like, what did you make of that then? So yeah, it was, I think the main thing I noticed was that the Hibs players were playing with a bit more freedom, like a weight was kind of lifted off their shoulders, which I suppose it was because there was no chance they were going to get dragged into the relegation playoff spot. So yeah, it looked like they were playing with a bit more freedom, a bit more, I guess a bit more positivity. And again, you know, the caveats, it was, you know, at least half the St. Johnstone team probably wouldn't have played. I think Callum Davidson said afterwards that, you know, a few of them hadn't played that much football in a long time, so they were suffering a bit of fatigue, cramp, that sort of thing. So, you know, yeah, you can sort of add those caveats in, but at the same time, you know, it was a nice way to end the season, I think. I mean, it's been a pretty crazy season, I think, for fans, for journalists, for the club. I mean, I think you look back to the games against like Santa Coloma and Rijeka and think, was that 10 months ago? And it doesn't feel like it.
That's crazy.
It feels like a lot longer. And perhaps if things had been going well for Hibs on and off the park, then it would have been, you know, the season would have felt like it had gone by in a flash. But yeah, I think a combination of factors, James Scott getting his hat trick, the youngsters getting a chance, obviously the Dnipro kids getting their chance at halftime, and yeah, just everything. It was just a positive way to end a season that's been pretty nuts at times for whatever reason, whether it's on and off the pitch, whether it's you know, results, managerial upheaval, COVID-19 outbreaks. Yeah, just, I mean, my first full season writing about Hibs full time, and it really couldn't have been any more eventful, I don't think.
Yeah.
Just, so yeah, it was good to have like a wee bit of positivity on the final day of the season, just, you know, close that chapter. You know, obviously, I think David Gray was a very relieved man afterwards. He was telling us quite a lot about how he wasn't sleeping very much, and you know, it's obviously difficult for him to deal with the new manager speculation when, you know, he's just been given a remit till the end of the season. So I think a nice way for him to sign off, a nice way for the players to sign off. And yeah, I think a 4-0 victory over St. Johnstone on the last day of the season with James Scott scoring a hat trick was just probably the game that this Hibs season deserved to finish. Just, you know, had everything, if you like. Well, didn't have everything, but you know what I mean.
Ah, yeah, no. In terms of the season, we had it, definitely had everything, because the season didn't have too much for the most part. But yeah, no, I think just a couple of things that we're going to end on. The same night as the St. Johnstone game was the Player of the Year Awards, an event that Hibs run every year. It's really good fun. If you didn't go this year, I would highly recommend trying to get tickets next year, because it was such a laugh. Lots of alcohol consumed, lots of last hud with the players, with our fans. It was great. But I think they probably got it spot on with the awards. Player of the Year, anybody disputing Cadden Player of the Year? Porches potentially get it instead?
Probably not for me. I think Cadden, just on the basis that he was available. Porches, I think we said, you know, gets a mark taken off him for his various suspensions. I thought really the player that would run him closest was Lewis Stevenson, and I was delighted that he kind of got the unanimous, by the looks of it, vote from his players. I think it means a lot, I'm sure, to get the award from fans, but I think it probably means just as much to get one from your guys that you share a dressing room with. So I thought that was well justified. And Porteous Young Player of the Year as well. No disputing that, I don't think, in terms of the kind of under 23 category, which I think he just sneaks inside by a smidgen. It all felt kind of fair to me, I suppose.
And yourself, Patrick, kind of disputing of Cadden?
Well, I wrote an article at the start of May stating why Chris Cadden should be Player of the Year. So, you know, absolutely no arguments here. It's a difficult one because you can't ever really give a Player of the Season to someone who's only been there for half the season. Otherwise, Martin Boyle would have been a shoo-in.
Of course, yeah.
And I think the awards for Stevenson and Porteous are probably, well, definitely justified. I think Porteous had been suspended less, then definitely would have been, definitely probably, I think, would have been a candidate, probably even more so than Cadden. I think it's just those, the red cards and suspensions probably counted against him. Lewis Stevenson, though, I mean, it's, I think I said this in the piece as well, that even if he was voted player of the year, he'd probably try and pass it off for someone else because that's just the kind of player he is.
Some man.
But I think, yeah, I think from, you know, watching Hibs over the last 10 months, I wouldn't argue with any of that. And, you know, obviously nice to see some of the awards as well for, you know, like the Pat Stance and Stevie Carr from Dnipro Kids. So I think the club got that spot on. I know the fans voted for player of the year, but, you know, it seems like it was... Yeah. Seems like a lot of it was spot on, and the right sort of, you know, right decisions made, good calls.
And there's not even any point in mentioning goal of the year because both of them were Jake Doyle Hayes's, and it was kind of like a coin flip between which one you would give it to. But yeah, guys, we've covered the Hibs season, we've covered the Jack Ross tenure, the Maloney madness. We've not covered Dilly Johnson because, you know, that's a future, but we have covered the fact that he's brought in two quite exciting players, David Marshall and, I'm going to look at his name so I don't get Nohan it wrong. Kenny. That's the one, Noah Kenny. Nohan? Nohan Kenny? What? I've forgotten his
name. Nohan, yeah.
Nohan Kenny. Yeah. We're saying that's correct. So yeah, hopefully it's a sign of positive things to come. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me. It's been good.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. And Liam, thank you as always.
Cheers, Harry. Thanks again, mate.
Hey, and as we've mentioned, with the... Actually, I was so rude there. Patrick, is there anything you would like to plug at all? That's what we always ask our guests.
No, not at all. Just, I think the only thing I would say is it's been quite nice to kind of connect with some of the fans this past season. I don't think the sort of the importance of what I do is lost on me. There's a lot of people, rightly or wrongly, hanging on my every word or every tweet. I think just it's nice that there's quite a lot of people who are paying attention to what I'm saying. I'm just sort of reading what I write, I guess. It's like I say, it's a big job, and it's you know, the magnitude of it's not lost on me, but it's nice being able to, you know, to write about, you know, one of the city's biggest clubs.
Hey, the biggest club in the city. That's what he said.
The cliche of it's not true until they've got a scarf over their head. Perhaps it's changed, though. It's not true until Patrick McPartlin has said it's true or rubbish said rumour. Because you have been extinguishing a lot of rumours over the course of the last few months, which hasn't gone unnoticed. So you've kind of become almost the golden source of whether it's true or whether there's an element of truth in it or whether it's just a load of nonsense.
Yeah, no, that hasn't escaped my notice. I've seen that as well. But yeah, it's. I think the best thing about it is I enjoy what I do. It's, you know, it's interesting every day of the week, even when I'm off, as we've established. Usually when I'm off, to be fair. And it's, like I said at the start, it's the kind of job that I think there are hundreds, potentially thousands of people who would love to be doing this. And I'm lucky enough to, you know, actually be doing it. And yeah, so hopefully an interesting season coming up to write about for hopefully better reasons from the club's point of view. And just it's just been a bit of a kind of roller coaster first season, and I imagine it's probably going to be much the same next season for different reasons.
Totally. Patrick's not going to plug anything of his, so I'll plug something of his for him. I sign up to your sort of weekly newsletter roundup that comes into my email inbox. On a random day of the week. I had noticed that I hadn't come in for a couple of weeks, and I thought, but it's a really good way.
I've been too busy, there's been too much going on.
Yeah, well, fair enough. But it's a really good way of just getting all the snippets that you perhaps might have escaped your attention, because there's quite a lot of content, obviously, that comes out from the news, you know, whether it's stuff in regards to the academy team or whether it's stuff in regard to the women's team, some stuff that maybe just doesn't quite get the same traction on Twitter as some of the first team news does. It's just a good way of getting round up all the various different stories from the club. So I do appreciate that weekly review when you get round to doing it, of course. Yeah. But
not very weekly review at the moment, but I'm hoping
sporadic review.
Yeah. I think I said that in one of the updates. I said, you know, it's taken a big risk calling it a weekly review, and it did come back to haunt me. So hopefully I might have to either retitle it or just get Matt together a bit more next season. But if Hibs could maybe be a little bit less of a basket case, that'd be good as well. Give me more time to do it.
I think we'd quite like that as well, to be honest. But yeah,
no, thanks for that. That's kind. So.
Yeah, of course. And I will, of course, be linked by Liam, who will do the tweet today. but yeah, thanks again so much to both of you for joining me. Been a very fun episode. And as we alluded to last week, we're kind of going to record when we've got things to record about. It's not really a down the slope holiday as such, but you know, we managed to go throughout the whole of summer last year recording every week, and we just need a break. We need a break, not a big one, a wee one. But yeah,
let's face it, we've got 6 weeks to the League Cup group stages or something, so we're not having that much of a break, are we?
Yeah, no, exactly. And then to be fair, we'll probably be recording on at least three of them, because as Patrick just alluded to, we're a bit of a basket case. So yeah, but boys, I've done the longest outro in the world. Thanks so much. Goodbye.
Good night.
Cheers.
Yeah.